Hello, my name is Jen Hickey. Welcome to the WEN podcast, a series of conversations with people as they share their WEN moments. Recognizing these times can change our destiny, help us to stop hiding behind the past or clinging to a future that may or may not happen. This podcast is about recognizing the power of the WEN moments. Hi guys, welcome back to the WEN podcast. And in the second episode of the wellness series, we are talking again to Aveen Bannon, and this week we are discussing eating disorders. We talk about the various different types, what Aveen is seeing in her clinic at the moment, and how to spot the many signs that you may not think could be the start of an eating disorder. You can find Aveen or any one of her team at dnc.ie or googlebodywise.ie for further information on eating disorders. Thanks a mil, guys. Aveen, hello. Welcome back. So good of you again to give us your time. So today we are going to be talking about eating disorders. Mm-hmm. And I suppose this is a hugely broad topic. But just from a dietitian's point of view and during COVID, what are you seeing now?
Okay, so this, I suppose, this is an area that I have worked closely in now for about 20 years. And it's something that I will say COVID has had an unbelievable impact on people's relationship with food in terms of disordered eating. What I have noticed is we're seeing a big increase in people who have lost weight, restrictive eating, overthinking food, not necessarily anorexia. A lot of it can be anxiety related, or a kind of a fixation of, you know, everything's out of control at the moment. You know, young girls, I'm saying young girls, it's young boys too, school, not knowing what's happening with exams, different things, and they start controlling food, or else they're looking at stuff online and they decide, oh, I should be keto, or I should be a vegan, I should be, you know, all these different things that they think they should do, that they jump into, and suddenly they fall into an eating disorder without realizing it. So there's a lot of people I'm meeting who, particularly, now always we would have met them, but more so in the last year, who kind of can't believe that they've gotten here. You know, suddenly they have a BMI of 14.5 and they really can't believe that they've gotten here.
And are we talking kids here?
I'm talking at age range from, in the last year, new people aged 11 to 53.
Oof, yeah. Wow,
that's across the board, huge. To the point that, you know, the waiting list is ridiculous at the moment. Like, there's not enough of me to give support to people. There's not enough services to support people, and poor GPs are overrun at the moment anyway. And there's not enough support services for it, and there's lots of reasons why, you know, and it can be a myriad of reasons, and it can be it's a very complex condition. But definitely, there's things that we can do as parents, for example. Mm-hmm. I think there's things that schools can do. There's lots of ways we can help get away from this a little bit, and helping get people more balanced with their food and trusting food again.
Gosh, it's as we said, it's so broad. Like, what are the, if you're a parent with kids, because you're saying there's not just girls, you know, typical years ago you would have just thought, oh, yeah, girls. So we've got boys as well. So what are the warning signs that people, that you might not know as a parent?
Okay, so a couple of things to look out for. One is, okay, well, let's start with girls. You know, we've all been teenage girls. Well, not all, actually, if there's any men missing, they haven't, obviously. But for us, as a woman, most during our teenage years, we will go through a period of time where we will not feel great in our body, or, you know, we're very critical of ourselves. And that is heightened now by, obviously, social media and all these different, we know all this. So if you see little things to watch out, one is control. If they start wanting to control what's been cooked in the kitchen, or, you know, what are we having for dinner today? How are you cooking it? Are you putting oil in that? Are you, little things like that, that just you're noticing a little bit more often, going, where is this coming from? They never used to ask. Like, they used to just come in and go, or they might say, what's for dinner? And that would be it. Mm-hmm. Suddenly, oh, I'm not eating this anymore. X, Y, Z. It could be anything, right? Or I'm not having fizzy drinks anymore because they're too high in sugar. Or reading labels, starting to read food labels. Just taking a more of an interest in it. But also on the flip side, they might be looking at, like, baking and looking at recipe books and very focused on food, or planning or structuring timing about meals. You know, what time is dinner at? Little things like that. But mainly I would say you know, if you've, particularly a teenage girl, a lot of them will at the moment experiment with maybe saying, I'm going to be a vegetarian or a vegan or something like that, which is fine if they want to be. Mm-hmm. But you know deep down that they're not really into vegetables. The chances of them eating tofu is like really slim, and they've never really had that much interest in any of these areas before. But that you think it might be more weight focused. You might just sit down and go, okay, let's plan this together. Will we go a bit more flexitarian, or how do you want to go about this, or what? You know, try and broach it with them. But it's very much to watch out for if you notice that kind of over worrying about things. And then it's to reflect back on yourself a little bit and go, do I talk about this? You know, do I talk about, I'm not going to put any oil in this because it's bad? Or, you know, do I talk about dietary stuff? And, you know, like, there was a monkey see, monkey do kind of element
of
it.
And this whole idea of good food, bad food.
Yeah. I mean, my poor kids, they go to people's houses. They say play dates, they go on play dates, right? Well, the younger ones, they go on play dates when they could. And, parents would actually say to me, is it okay that I gave them pizza? And I'd be like, yeah. And my poor kids would be like, what's the big deal? Because thankfully, I suppose, they've got a very healthy relationship with food where they don't really see food as good or bad.
Okay.
Whereas, you know, that's a key thing. Do you refer to things being good for you, bad for you at home? Mm. You know, like, my kids, it's a broken record, I'll say to them, there's no such thing as a good or bad food, only a good or bad diet. Okay.
It's so I'm listening here and I'm going, geez, you know, because I've always been into health and wellness and all that kind of stuff and cooking everything from scratch and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I developed an eating disorder when I was a teenager.
Yeah.
And I don't think you ever get away from it once.
Well, I'd say that you probably necessarily wouldn't have gotten the support the awareness of it wasn't then, that it is now, an understanding of it.
Yeah.
You know, because you say is, yeah, I mean, we say the rule of thumb is you can recover within 3 years, and if you don't, you might learn to live with it.
Yeah.
But I think you're right, it's always like your Achilles heel almost.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But as a result, I've always been aware of kind of healthy eating, healthy food and all that kind of stuff. And just with my own kids, you know, not that I would label, I haven't labeled things good or bad, but, you know, I would always be thinking, oh, I'd like them to eat well. And, you know, there's so much obesity now. So as a parent, it's kind of like, does everybody have an eating disorder then? Do you know, like, because everybody, there's too much sugar.
I was giving a talk to a girls' school in Dublin there on Thursday last, right? And they have me in every year to talk to the girls. And one of my slides is, you know, talking about, like, we have an increase of obesity in Ireland, but we have a really big increase in eating disorders. Like, how do
so
we get
the
balance
what the hell is
right,
going
okay?
on, yeah.
And, you know, I do feel this, you know, I mean, even terms like guilt-free eating. We should never feel guilty about eating food. Like that, you know, all of those different terms are people going, oh God, I shouldn't have eaten that. I'm like, why? You know, all these different things. Now, if you've some kids, you'll say that in front of water off a duck's back. It won't have any impact. But for some kid, if you have a child who tends to be, you know, a very good kid, quite academic, you know, likes to be good, likes to be on top of things, likes to achieve. They like to control. They like to structure and routine. They can start overthinking it.
Are you saying that, you have to be careful as well, you know, as a parent, like we're making mistakes perhaps without realizing,
obviously, not intentional,
and you're in the best will in the world, you're trying to do the best for your kids.
But absolutely.
I suppose it's a bit like shaming your body and your child overhearing it all of a sudden.
Exactly. I mean, if you're always talking about, I don't know, like a big bum, for example, you know what I mean? Say like something like that. Some kids might take nothing from that, but then one kid might go, I wonder, do I have it too? Or start becoming aware, like little things like that. And it's really individual to the child. And it's not, you know, it's nothing that you do wrong. It's just being aware of your child and how they are and how they're feeling about themselves. But also making sure that they see you eat well, like that they see you eat lunch, breakfast, dinner. They see you have, you know, the odd, I don't know, chocolate or something like that. Like they see that you're able to have a takeaway and not worry about it, or that you're able to have that relationship with food where you're not controlling your own diet, like you're eating the same food as the family.
Yeah,
you know. And I would come, you know, you will see families whereby they'll say, oh well, mum has something different or dad has something different, and it's like little just to watch out for, well, why is that? Or is that making them conscious of, well, why am I eating this? Or
as in, you're saying that, say, the kids will eat a different meal
and
the parents will eat a different meal.
Yeah, and that
or they won't
normally
eat together?
Yeah, well, I mean, God, that doesn't... I mean, in our house, it depends, because we... Well, when we're all working, they tend to... I feed them straight away when I get home, and we'll have our dinner later.
Mm-hmm.
And that's quite normal. But they know that we would eat the same food, for example. There's not... Like, for example, if we're having a family dinner, that we're all eating the same food together. And just that we're not talking about food while eating, or not ever putting it down.
Okay.
That's the main thing.
Yeah.
It's never saying, you know, to a child... Like, I'll hear people talk about clean eating. Okay, like clean eating just is one of those expressions that just sends me like like into a different spectrum. But I'm always like, you know, we don't eat dirty food.
What does that mean?
You know, or people say, oh, they're just eating dirt, like it's rubbish. And you're like, no, it's not rubbish. It's just, it's okay, not too much of it. So I would never say to my kids, like if they're having, say, chocolate, for example, like I have one who's like, you know, such a sweet tooth. And I say, like, don't have too much. It will get, when she was younger, it'll give you a sore tummy.
Mm.
I wouldn't say don't have it. It's bad for you. You know what I mean? Or I'll say about like safety. I'll say, oh, like worry, like I talk about like, you know, protect your teeth.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't refer to there's too much sugar in that. That's bad for you. I would just kind of point it in a way of
take it away from shaming it.
You know, there was one. I was in a children's hospital a couple of years ago, and there was a big kind of thing on the wall, and it had the sugar, these kind of bags of sugar behind all the different beside all the different foods. So it had bags of sugar beside everything, showing what the different foods were. As it happened, this was outside a ward where there were three anorexic patients.
Oh.
You know what I mean? And it's that kind of thing of, I understand what they're doing. They're trying to help parents understand if their child is overweight, what not to do. But sometimes that message is picked up by the people who don't need to worry about it.
Right.
And we get into that cycle. And it's just being careful. But the thing is not being afraid to discuss it with your child. You know, not being afraid to say, God, are you a bit worried about, like, calories at the moment, or are you a bit worried about food?
Is that something you're seeing? Are people afraid to talk about it with their kids?
Yeah, because I think they're afraid. I think everyone's terrified of giving their child an eating disorder.
Yeah.
And sure, we would be. Like, I mean,
well, I mean, oftentimes it's not about the food. So
it's all about control. All about control.
Is that what you're seeing?
Yeah, it's all about. So this is what we've seen in recent times. I mean, I have a couple of girls at the moment who really and truly, they fell into this without realizing what they were getting into. But they were in exam years, they were stressed out, they were at home, they didn't know what was happening, they haven't seen their friends. They started doing the couch to 5K, they start running a bit more, then they get into the food thing, then it escalates, and suddenly they've lost their period, then they're losing weight, and then suddenly it's, you know, they have an eating disorder, because once you get below a certain weight, you'll have eating disorder thoughts.
What are they?
Well, I suppose it's like, it's the control thing, it's the very particular, you know, how much, what is a portion, is this good for me, is this bad for me, I have lunch at 1 o'clock and 1:05 is too late now.
Okay.
You know, that kind of, that really rigidity thinking. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you'll notice the thinking becomes very black and white, very rigid, very structured, very routine.
And even for somebody as young as, say, a 10-year-old or 11-year-old.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, 12, I mean, I've recently had a couple of young boys come in, and it started with jogging. One of them started with jogging at the beginning of last March. The jogging kept going. Then he became focused on food. Then different things happened. And then also, like, if you look at some of the books in schools, like the SPG and home ec books, like, they're like, there's one of them has a big page that says, like, to control your weight, eat less bread, eat less potatoes. It's actually in the third year book.
Crikey.
So, like, these messages are coming from everywhere.
Mm.
And it's just... If you're feeling overwhelmed or struggling in any way and your life is feeling a bit out of control, you'll try and control things. Food is a very easy thing to control.
Yeah. So the different types, because there seems to be. So when I was growing up, anorexia, bulimia,
that
now.
Was it really?
Yeah, pretty much.
It was like full stop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we can come back after and talk about, you know, if you do think your child has an eating disorder, you know, what could be going on there. But just for a second, let's talk about the different types, if you like.
So you have, okay, there's obviously anorexia.
Mm-hmm.
And anorexia is really important to note out. Like, you don't have to be really thin to be anorexic. You know, that's really important to note out. Like that, to point out, sorry, that people can be, have very poor intake and not necessarily have a dangerously low BMI, but they can be anorexic. So, you know, we tend to think that poster, you know, child of anorexia, they can be very, very thin, or they might not be, but still have anorectic thoughts. There's a thing called ARFRID, which is an avoidant food restrictive disorder. And that's what historically we would have described people as fussy eaters. Where if now we realize the whole sensory thing, and it's all to do with more the taste or the sight, smell, texture of the food. And they might want to have the food, but really find it difficult to have it.
You know, what do you mean?
So it can be as a result, it can just happen for any reason. It can be as a result of a food trauma when they were younger or a really sore throat as a baby. It can be any of these random things. But that they might look at their friends eating pizza and really want to eat pizza, but they just can't do it. And they want to, but they can't. And offered can be in a normal healthy weight or they can be very underweight, because we would have definitely in the past misdiagnosed anorexia when actually it was offered.
Okay.
And you treat them quite differently.
In what way now?
So anorexia be much more about possibly even the quality of the calories or rules or structures, whereas offered you'd find that they might restrict all day to save calories for the evening time, where there'll be slightly different kind of slightly different traits you'll see.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. And then you have binge eating disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose where we historically we would have talked about bulimia, like binge eating can, you can just binge, have binge eating disorder. It can be binge eating with purging. It can be binge eating with laxative abuse. There's different kind of different ways of having it. But definitely there is a very broad spectrum of eating disorders, and you don't have to be on the extreme one to get help. That's the important thing.
Yeah. So you mentioned there, obviously, binging and then purging, I'm assuming, and then taking laxatives. What is the, what's going on in your body, the damage that's being done, if this is...
So, see, I you know, it's so hard, because for people who anything to do with purging or anything or binge eating, they really have such a sense of, there's very low, can be very, very low, and a real sense of shame after happening, and, you know, annoyed at themselves and struggling. And it's so really important to kind of reach out and support somebody when, well, with any eating disorder. But there's a real degree of shame. And what we really watch out for, particularly with the purging and laxative abuse, is looking at electrolyte levels and, you know, monitoring that they don't end up getting very low potassium levels, or, you know, that can damage the heart or anything like that.
Oh, crikey,
but you'll get an awful lot of, like, digestive issues.
This be a lifelong?
See, early intervention is key.
Right.
And the one thing with those disorders, they can go missed for a long time if someone doesn't look for help.
I'm assuming, well, I know, because I did it myself, there's ways in which you can disguise
absolutely
your eating disorder.
No, you can. You see, if you're, you know, if you're very, very, so it's underweight, somebody can see it. But if you're not, it might not be as obvious.
And even if you're underweight, you can disguise it.
Well, you can, absolutely. Yeah. And parents, and that's what I feel so sorry for parents. And I think we didn't notice. How did we not notice? Like, because it's a very manipulative condition, you know, they can absolutely disguise and do things. And I know in here, you know, wearing bracelets and all sorts, and like checking sleeves and, you know, little things, just because that's what their head is telling them to do, you know?
Yeah. And if a child or a teenager, or indeed an adult, because obviously you were saying.
Yeah, actually, it's probably important to point out, because we do, as we started, say, we tended to think of like teenage girls. And now we're thinking boys, obviously, as well. But we are 100% seeing more in adults. And it would have been then kind of, say, 5 years ago, a lot more in their 20s, kind of early 30s. And now I see it kind of in their 40s, 50s. And I think it's a point in your life when you're going through changes, mm-hmm. or your children are getting older, or there's a lot of change in your life and it might feel out of control, or like even the old concept of growing older, like, you know, just accepting that and trying to control that. That a lot of women with issues, and sometimes it first comes up with, you know, osteoporosis or, you know, digestive issues, or it'll come up with something else, like a red flag, you know what I mean? Will kind of appear, and then you look at the diet and realise that they're just not eating enough.
And so this idea then as well of over-exercising.
Yeah.
Do the two come hand in hand?
Over-exercising and under-eating is huge. Huge. Like, we would see an awful lot of that. And, you know, sometimes under eating and over-exercising, again, somebody might be a little bit overweight. Like, they might not be very lean, and will increase their calories and they start to lose weight, which completely messes with their heads because they're going, how does this work? But then there's others, and we'll see, you know, and probably more so in women, but not exclusively, where they are over-exercising, under-eating, probably have osteoporosis, different problems, and managing, you know what I mean? It's like almost, you know, it's like functioning with an eating issue.
And are you talking about women kind of our age?
Yeah.
Okay. And this is perhaps just all in an effort to kind of, you know, slow everything down, aging process, all that kind of thing.
And you get caught in a, you know yourself, you can get caught in a bubble where you know, you can't see the wood for the trees. You don't see how lean you are. You know, there's a body dysmorphia can happen. And as I say, women I mean, by our nature, we tend to be very critical of our bodies. And
so is there a warning sign for, say, a woman in her 30s and 40s? So, you know, maybe it's there's just a little bit too much control over the breakfast, lunch and dinner, or they won't allow themselves to eat out.
I think there's a couple of things. One thing is osteoporosis. Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, obviously, there's many reasons why it happened. We'll talk about that another time. But I mean, it can be a red flag to the fact is that you're under eating or over exercising. Your periods become irregular, or there's a change in periods or anything like that.
But if you're that age, you could be.
Exactly. You see people
missing your periods anyway. I'm just thinking of all the little, that's not that. And, you know.
And there's a lot of excuses you can come up with. But I mean, the key thing is, you kind of find yourself like you kind of just grab a coffee in the morning and because you know you're meeting your friend for lunch. Or you have your breakfast and then, oh, sure, I was too busy. I just grabbed a bit of fruit at lunchtime. I just grabbed something to keep me going and I'm fine. Or convincing yourself you're not hungry.
Okay.
That's the thing is like people who say, oh, I'm never hungry. I'm fine on, 13, 14, 1500 calories a day.
So how many calories do we need?
Oh, probably.
A normal woman working out three times a week, age 40.
Probably about 2000.
Yeah.
Roughly okay. About 2000, and sometimes it might be 1800 if you want to lose a bit of weight, or if you're very active, it might be 2200, roughly.
And for a child then, how many calories?
For teenagers, it's between 2400 and 2900.
Okay, yeah.
That's quite a lot of calories.
Yeah.
And then kids, obviously, it would be kind of, younger, under the age of 12. It might be more 1700 calories, roughly. But then, you see, I haven't counted calories in clinic in about 15 years with the food groups and balance.
Yeah.
And I find the calorie thing, like I try and, steer away from counting calories because it doesn't.
That's
mean
an whole disorder in itself then, really, isn't it?
It is. When people start tracking, it gets too controlling and we're not machines. Like we do have slightly different requirements every day, depending on, how you slept, your energy levels, different things.
So what is your thought then on fasting?
Like the intermittent fasting?
Yeah, because there's this whole new buzz, excitement about it. And for someone like me who developed an eating disorder and
definitely
like it's
not
under control. Yeah, it is under control. Yeah. But for me, I'd be almost afraid to start that.
Yeah, and you shouldn't. And actually, I just did a thing on Instagram about this last week.
Okay.
Because we were talking about, it's so topical at the moment. So intermittent fasting, the research was done on that if you eat in an 8-hour window and fast for 16 hours, and they saw that it helped kind of reduce inflammatory markers in some people. And it seemed to show like short-term weight loss and improvements in cardiovascular health. We don't know the long-term impact of it yet. So we don't know if that's a long-term result. It's just not suitable at all if you have type 1 diabetes or a history of an eating disorder. Just don't do it.
Okay.
How it works is if you start kind of in the morning time and say finish at 6 or 7.
Mm-hmm.
So realistically, if you look at it, it probably just stops the evening eating. Mm-hmm. That's the practical element of it. Stops the biscuits or whatever in the evening time. Like it definitely doesn't work when people go, I start eating at 1 o'clock in the day or 12 o'clock in the day and finish at 9 at night.
Right.
Like it doesn't work that way. And that's probably because of the way they're eating. So it's one of those things. I only ever use it really in weight management if I feel the person's okay and it works for them, or a metabolic syndrome. But I found...
What's a metabolic syndrome?
So it's kind of more like if you have problems with insulin resistance or anything like that. It kind of looking at helping to kind of regulate blood sugars and manage that way. And more
so
like
is
type
that,
2.
Oh, right. Okay.
Diabetes,
okay.
Not type 1.
And what about like women getting menopausal women? What's your view on that?
It depends on their weight or different things. Mm. And you see, you had to be practical. Like I found pre-COVID, it didn't work well because of working days. So you were kind of saying, if you're going to do this, like sure, people were in the office for those 8 hours they were allowed to eat. So like they couldn't eat at home. So it just didn't work practically speaking.
So people aren't getting enough nourishment then.
Yeah. So then I found that when lockdown, I've had some patients do it at home when they're working from home and it works quite well because they can have their breakfast at home at say 9 o'clock and then, finish their work day and have their dinner at 7 o'clock in the evening. But realistically, I suppose how we discuss it is saying it's just really kitchen closed after dinner time.
Mm.
That's the main thing.
And it's not that you're saying don't do it, but...
But like, I only use it for people who probably need to lose weight or might have something inflammatory going on and weight issue as well. I don't use it that often, actually.
Okay.
Not as often as people think. It's kind of a new thing and it's not necessarily a bad one, but it just, then you get... It always grows. You see things now even on Instagram where they're saying, oh, only eat within 4 hours or eat within 6 hours. You're like, okay, now we've like lost the run of ourselves. we still have to fuel our bodies.
Okay.
And,
yeah, yeah.
You know, particularly with women, like our cortisol levels only rise are highest at about 6 o'clock in the morning, and that's like your stress hormone, which we naturally produce every day. And if you don't, if you go and exercise on an empty stomach, particularly as a female, like those levels keep on rising, and that's not good for us. So it's that kind of thing of people waiting to eat. It might not necessarily suit everybody, particularly female.
So what could be happening?
Well, basically, so there's a whole interrelationship between cortisol and estrogen levels.
Yeah.
So if your cortisol can be very high, it can actually reduce your estrogen levels and cause problems. So you just, women just have to be careful with their health.
Yeah, so you definitely need to be talking to somebody that knows what they're talking
and
about.
Also, if you're a healthy weight, you don't need to do it.
Yeah.
Like, there's no reason. That's the thing, but sometimes like I find people looking at diets and I'm going to go, but like you're healthy. Obviously what you're doing is working for you, or you know, you can tweak your diet and make it healthier, but you don't need to change or do dramatic changes to our diets when we're actually already healthy.
Mm. Okay, so if you are, you know, for a child or a teenager that could be, you know, in the middle of an eating disorder, you know, the dangers then, what happens when you, for a girl, for example, misses their periods? I mean, is that something long term?
If you miss 3 periods in a row, you're at risk of osteopenia.
Mm-hmm.
Which is obviously pre-osteoporosis. So we're obviously really, you know, a real priority for us is getting a girl's period back, okay, and getting it back. And, you know, talking about a spectrum of eating disorders, we have an awful lot of girls now, young girls in particular, who are over-exercising, under-eating, might be an okay weight, but they're not, they've stopped getting their periods.
Yeah.
And it's because they're over-exercising and they need to pull back on their exercise. So you need to get the balance right. So I would say as a parent, supporting your child is, one is make sure they don't have some sort of a pedometer, Fitbit, something along those lines, because, you know, that's become quite a common, a couple of years ago it was a confirmation present, and then it was becoming like a communion present almost. And, you know,
and parents think they're doing the right thing, because, you know,
think about the big picture, like a child does not need to be counting their steps.
True.
Put them out in the garden and play for an hour and they're running around. They don't need to know their steps. And again, there's many kids who'd look at that and think nothing of it, but there's a few who will start competing with themselves. And, you know, little things like that. So like not making them over aware of kind of counting their exercise, just keeping kids active.
Mm-hmm. That's impossible though today, do you not think?
Formal exercise, you're trying to get them out and like even just drag for the family walk every day. So it's very different
torture.
At the moment.
Yeah, yeah.
But again, I suppose it's not focusing it on steps.
Yeah,
or
I get
you have to get that amount of steps in the day. I know even my daughter's secondary school, like they're told to send in pictures of their steps, their pedometer every day. And I'm like, you know, going, hello, you're not getting one. And that's not say you've gone for an hour's walk, but not that you've had to show how many steps you've done. But it's that balance of, you know, not kind of doing that or even discussing it too much yourself at home in front of the kids, or, you know, not talking about foods being good or bad, or, you know, making sure there's just like there is that 80-20 kind of way of living at home, eating healthily 80% of the time, 20% of a window for treats. You might be doing all of that and your child still has an issue with food. Like it's not something we've done. And it's just trying to support them as much as you can to get them their reassurance and trust back with food, because what they have lost is the trust in food.
Gosh, okay.
You know, and that's why we work not on giving calorie plans, but on helping nutrition education around the food. You know, reminding yourself that the brain uses 6 grams of glucose every hour. So our brain uses 144 grams of glucose every day just to live. You know, that's why you'll never meet a dietitian who doesn't eat carbs.
And actually, that's a really interesting topic because, you know, for me anyway, and I'm obviously not a dietitian or nutritionist or anything like that. So for me, I'm thinking, all the healthy fats for the brain. But actually, as well as that, we need glucose.
Like, everything works in synergy. Like, you know, our brain needs carbohydrate for fuel, and our muscles prefer carbohydrate as a source of fuel. Our muscles need protein for maintaining themselves and repair. You know, the bones need calcium, and then they need vitamin D and magnesium. And then we need fats, obviously, for hormones and skin and our brain and lubrication and insulation of organs. But what's interesting is, you know, the brain is made up of 60% fat, but it needs glucose. The muscles need protein for repair, but they need glucose for fuel. Calcium needs the protein to be absorbed, but then it needs vitamins D and magnesium to be absorbed, which are fat soluble. So everything works in synergy.
Yeah. And so this whole idea of cutting out carbs, whole food groups.
Yeah. It works. And I draw them my happy man. I draw them for patients to show how everything works in synergy.
You know, and I mean, you could be innocently, like I know myself years ago, I'd be thinking, oh, I'm trying to cut down on my carbs and all that. You know, you think you're doing the right thing. But clearly, and for a child, that's just...
And that's the thing. You know, my 8-year-old, actually, it was a year ago when she was 7, once came home from school saying, oh, white bread is full of sugar. And I was like, oh, hang on a second. There's actually no sugar in white bread. And where did you hear that? And, you know, that was from another kid in the playground at the age of 7. Crikey. And, you know, so we have to be really careful about...
So this is all social media, is it? Are they picking it up?
Yeah, and probably picking up on conversations or, like, you know, just little snippets of information here and then. And kids take things as gospel. Like, they're very black and white thinking. They, you know, is it like, they're like, can I have it? Yes or no?
Yes.
You know, they don't tend to get into the, we're able to think about...
They're not going,
picture.
Where's the carbohydrates, the protein, the vitamins, the magnesium?
So
yeah.
It's just trying to help get that balance at home, that they see you're having it and that they do it. But if they start to lose trust in it, that you help them learn how to get the trust back in it.
Yeah.
Or, you know, bring them to somebody to talk to it, because sometimes, especially if a teenager, they're not going to listen to you because you're their parent. So they might need to go and see a professional, and then you 100% need to make sure it's someone who's experienced with eating issues.
Yeah, so... That's what I was just going to ask there about just treatment and stuff like that, because it can be a very long road.
It can be a very long road, and I think that's what you need to understand. But that's made clear to you when you meet the professionals. But, like, you know...
And not just a dietitian, we're talking maybe psychotherapist.
Psychologist. Yeah. I mean, there's a whole team, like BodyWise are amazing in terms of getting resources and who to help. But, like, it's your GP, your psychologist, your dietitian, there might be a psychiatrist as well. If you're as an outpatient or if you're an inpatient, you know, inpatient, there's a whole team as well. And it is a team approach.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody works together.
So you work with psychologists as well?
Absolutely. So all of, like, the girls I see, you know, we will... I mean, for me to be effective, they really need to be seeing a psychologist. You know what I mean? And then it means that if we're all working together, like, you know, I'm not touching on psychology. They're not having to touch on nutrition. The GP is there as our support in terms of monitoring the bloods and blood pressure, and a really good, you know... to kind of keep everything working together. But unfortunately for GPs, like, they don't have the time to be able to give all the support that they need, but they'll kind of oversee it all.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And be like a team approach. And it's one of those things to make sure, because you have to be so careful with the language you use as somebody with an eating issue. You know, like, you know, I don't tend to even discuss the numbers with them. Like, I don't really discuss the weight with them. We talk about replenishment, you know, nourishing, like repairing, like not weight gain, you know, not target weights. And then a target weight implies they're going to be better when you get to that weight, and psychologically they might not be.
Because years ago it was all about you get the weight on, get the weight.
Get to that BMI and you'll be fine.
Yeah, good luck, see you.
Yeah. So, like, it's, you know, it's really about trying to look at the whole approach and the whole picture. But BodyWise is a really, really good resource to look at to give you direction on where to go. And if you're ever concerned, the first thing you do is go to your GP, you get bloods done, blood pressure, have a chat, and just, you know, you might not even say to your child why you're doing it if you think they won't go, but it
I
might
mean,
be.
I mean, is it the case that the child is probably unlikely to go to you as the parent? Are you as the parent going to be the one to notice, perhaps?
It can work both ways. You know, sometimes you'll find a child will actually just break down and go, I'm really struggling here, I need the help. Or it might be one of their friends might be wary and contact a parent.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah. Or there could be something going on, nothing related to food.
Yeah.
You know,
and you see schools, that's where we're missing schools, because sometimes schools might have picked up on things before a parent, because they might notice things, or a child in school will have gone to, you know, the counsellor in school, who'll then pick up and contact a parent, and we're missing that element at the moment.
Gosh, it's desperate. Yeah. Okay, crikey, so much to think about. Thank you so much, Aideen.
A huge
area. Massive, and obviously we've only touched on it today.
Yeah.
So I'm going to put all the support groups up on the website.
Yes, do.
Okay, brilliant. Thank you so much. Guys, if you're enjoying this podcast, maybe you could share it and subscribe to the podcast, and come and check us out at thewhenpodcast.com. Thank you so much.